This Shabbos is Parshas Mishpatim. We bench Rosh Chodesh Adar. Rosh Chodesh Adar is going to be on 2 days, Rosh Chodesh, Sunday and Monday. The Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Adar, or if Rosh Chodesh Adar falls on Shabbos, that Shabbos is the first of the four special Shabbatot, which is Parshas Shkolin. And we read the entire Sedra of Mishpatim, but the Maftir we read in Parshat Kitisa, which is in Sefer Shemot, the first few psukim of Parshat Kitisa, which are the mitzvah of giving Shkalim. And in the tunnel of the Bet HaMikdash, there was a mitzvah every year at the beginning of Adar, everybody should give a half a shekel, and that half a shekel was used for the sacrifices in the Bet HaMikdash during the course of the year. The next special Shabbat is going to be the Shabbat immediately before Purim. Purim in the rest of the world is Motzoi Shabbos and Sunday. Purim in Yerushalayim is Sunday night and Monday, which means the Shabbos immediately before Purim is going to be Parshat Zachor, reading the Parsha in Devarim of Zachor, remember Asher Asal Lecha Amalek Baderech what Amalek did to you, which means that there is a Shabbat Hafsaka, what is called a Shabbos where there's an interruption. The second Shabbos in Adar, which means a week from this coming Shabbos, is just going to be Shabbos Parshas Truma, no special Shabbat at all. Because the first, and every Shabbos is special, you know what I mean. But it's not one of the four Shabbatot. First one is Shkolim, second is Zohar, then comes Parshat HaParah, Parshat Parah, and then Parshat HaChodesh. Parshat HaChodesh is the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Nissan. And then, of course, after that, there will be the Shabbos before Pesach, which is Shabbos HaGadol. And if you think you're nervous about cleaning up for Pesach, I'm nervous about what am I going to say in the Shabbos HaGadol Drashi, understand? That's the kind of thing I'm worried about. I think I'm even worried about Shabbos Shuvah already. So you should know that everybody has something to worry about. And the fact is, every year I do end up with something to say for Shabbos HaGadol. And you know what? You end up with a house beautiful and clean and ready for Pesach every year too. That's all. Okay. That having been said, let's go to Parshas Mishpatim. There are two psukim that I want to study in this week's Sedra. Perek 22, Pasuk Aleph. Im b'machteret Yimatzei ha-ganav v'hukav ha-meit ein lo damin. If a thief is going to be found b'machteret, machteret means that he digs under a house stealthily, comes into a house to rob. Remember, Parshat Mishpatim is the parsha where we have just about the largest number of judicial laws of Torah. The legislation of Torah begins in Parashat Mishpatim in earnest. And we begin with the law of slaves, the Eved Ivri, the law of damages, of torts, the laws of Shomrim, Shomer Chinam, Shomer Sacha. All of these laws appear in Parashat Mishpatim. Now we're talking about the law of one who steals. So the special halacha in Torah, Torah says, "In the machteret yimatzei ha-ganav." If the ganav is going to be found, as he digs in, comes in the dark of night, it seems, in order to steal, v'hukav ha-meit, and the person into whose house he is coming will kill him, smite him, and he dies. And it may even be anybody else who's going to kill him. And he dies, ein lo damin. Ein lo damin means he doesn't have blood. What does it mean, he doesn't have blood? Who's he? Ein lo, he. So I'm going to begin with Rashi. there's going to be Rashi on the one hand, and the other Mepharshim are going to disagree with Rashi. Rashi says, Im b'machteret, let's read the Rashi, I'll read the Rashi on this pasuk. Im b'machteret, if he comes stealthily, kishahayach choter et habayit, as he's digging under into the house. Of course, in modern Hebrew, machteret has a very specific meaning, but the specific meaning, of course, flows from this pasuk. Machteret is the underground. An underground group is a machteret. Because that's precisely what the man is doing in this pasuk. He is digging underground. Ein lo damim. Now, the word lo could really refer to one of two people. Who are the two people? Let's say for the following. We are going to have to use, we're going to have to use names rather than A and B, and we're going to need a C also. I'm going to use Reuven, Shimon, and we may at some point need Levi. I can't help it. Reuven is the ganef. Reuven is the ganef, and he's coming to steal from Shimon. He digs into the house of Shimon. Ein lo damim, so for now we're talking about Reuven and Shimon. He doesn't have blood. Lo could either refer to Reuven, or it could refer to Shimon. Now remember, who's the thief? Very good. And who is the victim? The victim is Shimon. Okay, we can't get our Reuvens and our Shimons confused. And if I do, please let me know. Stop me dead in my tracks. Ein lo damim could be either Reuven or Shimon. Rashi says Ein lo damim means Reuven. And he says the following. Ein zu ritzicha, if Shimon kills Reuven, this is not murder. Harehu kemet miikaro. Reuven is, it's as though he was a dead man to begin with. Kan, lindetecha Torah, here the Torah teaches you, in bola hargecha, if somebody comes to kill you, hashkein v'hargo, you go first and kill him. V'zela hargecha ba, this fellow Reuven has come to kill you. What do you mean he comes to kill you? But he came to steal. I don't know, he wants a TV, he wants a video. He came in to steal, says Rashi, and we're going to see the source of this in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Says Rashi, V'zeh lahar d'chabal, this person comes to kill you, Shahare yodeyahu, he knows, She'ein odam ma'amid atzmo, a person is not going to stand idly by, V'ro'eh she'notlin b'mono b'fonov, person is not simply going to stand there and see how somebody is walking off with his money in his presence. Vishotek, and remain silent. Man is not going to do that. So what does Reuven expect when he comes into the house to steal from Shimon? That there's a very good possibility that Shimon is going to attempt to protect his property. Lefichach, therefore, almanat kein ba. Reuven comes with that intent in mind. In the event that Shimon is going to try and stop me from stealing, I'm going to kill him. And therefore it means that Reuven, though he ostensibly is coming to steal, but back in the back of his mind there is the intent to kill, and we consider him a killer. And therefore, Reuven is habala hargocha, he's the one who's coming to kill. Hashkein v'harko, go ahead and kill him first. Lefichach, therefore Rashi says, on the Hashkein v'harko, this is the intent with which he came, Shem Yamod Bal HaMomim Kenegdo, if the owner of the money is going to stand up to him, Yahargenu, he will kill him. So Rashi learns, Ein lo, he, meaning Reuven, his blood is not blood. He's a dead man. The halacha sees him as though he's a dead man as he begins to enter the house. He's a dead man. And therefore, when Shimon kills him, Shimon killed a dead man. The Ibn Ezra, the Rashbam, the Ramban, and the Ravid learn the pasuk differently. Lo refers to Shimon. Ein lo. Shimon is not accused of damim spilling blood. According to Rashi, Ein lo means Reuven. The one who's breaking and entering doesn't have blood. He's not a live man. Torah looks at him as though he's dead, and therefore Shimon, who kills him, obviously is innocent. The other four Mefarshim learn Ein lo damim is referring to Shimon. Ein lo, we don't hold against him damim, the crime of spilling blood. Okay, next pasuk. Two pesukim are all we have to deal with. Im zarcha hashemesh alav, if the sun shone on him, or if the sun shines on him, damim lo. We'll translate that in a moment. The same machloket that we have between Rashi on the one hand and the Ramban, the Ravid, the Rashban, and the Ibn Ezra on the other hand, we have the same machloket in this pasuk. Damim lo. If the sun shines, then he does have blood. Shalem yeshalem. So the thief has to pay for what he stole. In Ein lo, if he doesn't have money to pay, v'nimkar b'gnevato, so he should be sold into slavery, and the money that he is worth as a slave, that's what he's going to use to pay the one from whom he stole. Okay. I see the looks on your face. I want you to understand that we are going to take these psukim and we are going to put them in a contemporary context. We're going to see how extremely, extremely important are the principles that emerge from this pasuk, these psukim. What does it mean if the sun shines on him? So Rashi says, Im zorcha Hashemesh alav, Ein ze elokim min mashal. This is a metaphor. It's a metaphor. It doesn't mean that there's a difference between day and night. If one reads the pasuk kipshuto, simply it would seem that the first pasuk is talking about a man in the stealth and the dark of night. He's digging in. But what happens if he comes in after sunrise? After sunrise, different halacha. One halacha at night, the one halacha after sunrise. That's not how Rashi learns it. Rashi learns that in Zorcha Hashem Yishalov, if the sun shines on him, this is a metaphor. What we're being told is the following. If it's clear to you, if it's clear to you that the person who's digging into your house is at peace with you and would never consider killing you, if it's clear to you that he's at peace with you, just like the bright, beautiful sun, which is shalom ba'olam, peace in the world. In other words, if it's clear to you, it's so clear. It's beautiful. There's no doubt about it. You're not in danger. Kach poshut lecha. So it is clear to you. Sheino bol laharog. He's not coming to kill. Afilu yamud balamom in kenego. If I know for certain that this person, even if I stand up and I protect myself, he's not going to kill me, then I don't have a right. I don't have a right to kill him. I don't have a right to kill the intruder in the dark or in the light. If it's clear like the sun, it's clear like daylight that he's at peace with me, he's not going to kill me. Kigon, and the Gemara says, for example, of hachote liknov memon haben, a father who's coming to steal from a son. There we're absolutely certain that the father would never consider killing the son. The opposite is not true, the Gemara says. The opposite is not true. But a father who comes in, I imagine that means a mother too, a father or a mother who coming to steal from a child, and it's clear that even if the child is going to stand up and not permit the theft to take place, there's no fear of murder here. It's clear that the father has great mercy upon his son. He's not coming to kill, he's only coming to steal. Then, Im zarcha Hashem es alav, if it is clear that this person is not coming to kill, damim lo, says Rashi. And from what Rashi says here, we understand even better what Rashi said in the pasuk before. Damim lo, he has blood. That means kachai hu chashuv Reuven, and in this case Reuven, the father of Shimon, kachai hu chashuv, he's considered alive. Uritzichahu, and it's murder. Im yahargenu balabayit, if the owner of the house is going to kill him, it's murder. And therefore, all that has to happen is shalem yishalem haganav mamin shaganav veinu chayiv mita. The ganav has to pay what he stole, but there is no death penalty. All right. Mishnah in Masechta Sanhedrin. After we've learned the Mishnah and a few lines of the Gemara, we're going to analyze what it is that has happened here. Mishnah says the following. Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Daf Ayin Vet Amid Aleph, Habba B'machteret Nidon Al Shem Sofo. One line. Habba B'machteret, somebody who comes to steal in the dark of night, Nidon Al Shem Sofo, is judged because of the end. That means at this particular moment, when he comes into the house, he's not a killer. He hasn't killed anybody. Hasn't touched a hair on anybody's head. But the Torah has told us that we judge him on the basis of what the end may very well be. And right now, we therefore say he's a dead man. Omar Rava, a few lines in the Gemara. Rava says, my time in the Machteret, what's the reason for Machteret? Why did the Torah say you can kill the person who comes into the house? Why does Shimon have a right to kill Reuven? Rava, Chazaka means it's absolutely certain. Ein Odom Mamid Atzmo Al Mamono, a person doesn't stand idly by when somebody is coming to steal his money. V'ai, and therefore, the thief, Meimer Omar, thinks to himself, Iazilna, if I go in Koilapoi, he's going to stand up against me. V'lo Shah. Me, Katilnele, I'm going to kill him. Vahatora Amra, and the Torah said, Habola Hargacha, the one who comes to kill you, Hashkein Le Hargo, kill him. Kill him first. Okay. Let's analyze. This was, some of the things I wanted to say was said at a shiur some long time ago, and I want to make sure that it gets down on tape properly. And then it's also important to understand not only the Gemara, the Rashi, and the Pesukim here, but there are many halachot that are going to emerge precisely from what we're talking about. Reuven comes to steal from Shimon. The prop that I usually use is this watch. I don't know why I've been using the same watch for 15 years. Right. I didn't have my... Reuven. At first glance, there are three possibilities. Possibility number one is Reuven comes to steal the watch from Shimon. Shimon is going to kill him. Shimon is going to kill him. There's another possibility. Shimon is going to try and kill Reuven the thief. But Reuven the thief is going to be quicker on the draw, and Reuven is going to kill Shimon. There is a third possibility. The third possibility is that there's going to be a gun duel, a battle between Reuven and Shimon. And in the course of that struggle over the watch, both Reuven and Shimon are going to die. Tragic. Tragic! I have a plan. We've called it, obviously, the gold plan. I have a plan. Why permit a situation where there can be such grief, death, women will become widows, children are going to be orphaned, parents will lose a child. Death, Reuven, Shimon, either Reuven or Shimon, or Reuven and Shimon, for what? For a shlugin, a watch. $25 watch, $30 watch over this, people are going to die. My suggestion is that when Reuven comes to steal the watch from Shimon, rather than Shimon shooting him, what Shimon should do is give him the watch. Take the Pashulga the watch. Gates of Brech and Peace, take the watch. Look at what I've accomplished. For $25. And I don't know, it's already an old watch. It may not even be worth $25 anymore, except as an antique, maybe. All right. For all of this, look what I've saved. I've saved Reuven's life. I've saved Shimon's life. I've brought joy and happiness to so many families. It could have been an awesome and frightening tragedy over there. Why doesn't the Torah say, Shimon, Zaynish Kanar, give Reuven the watch and be done with it all? So you might tell me, I know what you're going to say. You're going to tell me, Shimon can't help himself. Doesn't that seem what the Gemara is saying? When Rava says in the Gemara, Chazaka ein odam mamid atzmo al mamono. Chazaka, you can be absolutely certain, a man is not going to stand idly by while they come to steal from him. Oh, like, what does that mean? That means he can't help himself? And what if he can't help himself? Does that mean that Torah never legislates against man's feelings? Let me ask you. I mean, I'm going to maintain that Torah may very well legislate against the nature of men. And Torah will say, yeah, I know how you feel about it, but I'm telling you, yes or no. And if Torah does legislate against man's feelings, why can't Torah simply say, what do you mean you can't help yourself? You have to fight for your watch. You want to die for your watch? Do me a favor. Let Torah tell him, give the watch to Reuven. Give him the watch. How do I know that Torah will even legislate against man's feelings and emotions? Let me ask you a question. Man is on a desert island. Very hungry. No food. He happens to have $1 million with him. The ganze vermegen. I don't know what he's doing. It's not important what he's doing on a desert island with $1 million. But he's there. And somebody comes walking by and he has a kosher sandwich. But a real kosher sandwich. When I mean a real kosher sandwich, I mean whatever you want, OU, it's OU. You want badatz, it's badatz. Rabbanut, okay, rabbi, anything. Bells, some say. Real kosher sandwich. And he says, listen, I'll sell you this kosher sandwich for $1 million. $1 million. What should he do? Should he buy the sandwich for $1 million? Remember, after he pays $1 million for the sandwich and he eats it, a few hours later, he's going to be hungry again, and he won't have anything kosher to eat. And of course, the halacha is going to be, man's life is in danger, so you eat that which is treif. So I'm asking, should he buy the sandwich for $1 million? And I tell you, it's not even a fresh sandwich. Should he buy it for $1 million or not? So the halacha is very, very clear in Shulchan Aruch. In Simin Tav Reish Nun Vav, in Shulchan Aruch Arachayim, that's talking about the halacha of Esrig and Lulav. So the Shulchan Aruch here says that there's a mitzvah to buy, if you can, a Lulav and an Esrig that's nice. We talked about Zekeli Vanvehu, this is my God and I will beautify him. Buy a beautiful Lulav and a beautiful Esrig. So there's a certain limitation. You don't have to go spend all of your money in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Hidur mitzvah, but you should spend a bit more, a third, if for a third of the price more you can buy a much more beautiful lulav and esrog, go spend more. Says the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch, avolotase, when you're talking about whether one should transgress a negative commandment, Yitain kol mimono kodem sheyavor, or a person should give all of his money
rather than transgress a negative commandment. Halacha in Shulchan Aruch. You should give all of your money. That means Shulchan Aruch Paskins pay $1 million for the kosher sandwich rather than eat treif. Kol mamono you give rather than transgress a negative commandment. Does that mean that that the halacha is legislating something that goes against man's basic nature? Of course. Of course Shulchan Aruch says that. If so, I'm back to the gold plan. Why does the Torah permit, not only permit, the Torah sanctions a gun duel over here in the middle of the night between Reuven and Shimon for this watch? Why? Let him give him the watch and be done with it all. Be done with it all. I have to admit, the gold plan is a very, very bad plan. It's very bad. In a sentence, what the gold plan would really mean is that Torah, for all time, would be legislating the law of the jungle. That's what Torah would be saying. It would be the law of the jungle. That means there's no such thing as possession. The Torah would be condoning terrorism. Because what the Torah is saying is, if you come to take, you come to take, given. We say in Yiddish, I megit, nentman. Over here it would be, I menent, git. If Torah would ever have legislated something that it would have sown the seeds for the absolute destruction of the fabric of every civilization and every society, it would mean let this Bogdanov Peret, he's a terrorist. He's a terrorist. It means giving in to the demands of terrorism. It means giving in to coercion. It means that there's no such thing as what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours. This would be the destruction of all society and all civilization. Impossible for a world to conduct itself that way. And we'll go one step further. It would really mean that we could, if the halacha would be like what I suggested, and of course I didn't suggest it seriously, if it would have been as I suggested, we could come to the ultimate absurdity of all. Two absurdities. Listen to this. If the halacha would say, Reuven, who comes in to steal a watch from Shimon, so what's the halacha? Shimon, don't endanger anybody. Zanish kana, give the watch to Reuven. If that would be the halacha. So now let me ask you, what happens if Levi is present when Reuven comes in to steal from Shimon? What would Levi's be responsible? What would his responsibility according to the halacha be? His responsibility would be to make sure that Shimon relinquishes his watch to Reuven. do you grasp the total absurdity? If the halacha would be like me, if the halacha would be that when Reuven comes to steal from Shimon, Shimon give Reuven the watch. What if I don't want to give the watch? Shimon doesn't want to give the watch. And Levi is there. Levi and Yehuda and Yisachar and Zebulun are there. What would their responsibility be? Their responsibility would be to tell the victim, Shimon, Shaikatz this the best. Give Reuven the gun if you watch immediately. You should know, it's not merely legitimate, but this is the... In order to understand halacha, or to know if something is right or wrong, if we reach the point of absolute absurdity, that cannot be the halacha. The halacha is chokhma, wisdom of the highest order. It's not absurd. Do you hear what I'm saying? If the halacha would be that Shimon should give his watch to the thief Reuven, so if Levi is there, Levi would have to give me tochacha. He would have to, Shimon, what are you talking about? Said you should give your watch to Reuven. Give your watch to Reuven. What do you mean you're not going to give your watch to Reuven? I'll give you a patch, I'll give you a clip. Give that watch to Reuven. That's, of course, absurd and ridiculous. There's another absurdity. If the halacha would be that the victim has to relinquish his property to the alleged aggressor, then I can imagine like this. Watch the scene. Reuven comes in to steal from Shimon. It's not as a mitzvah, according to my plan, as a mitzvah to give the watch to Reuven the thief. Oh, so first of all, you put on a garment, and then you say, "Hadeni muchan mezumen lekayin mitzvahs." Give the gzela, give it to him, and then maybe even a bracha shetit son of itzayis of itzigon of the Rebbeinu Shem commanded me to give him the watch, and I give him the watch. Ah, but wait a minute. After Shimon gives his watch to Reuven, you know what he does? He pulls out a gun and he says, "Reuven, I want to give you a mitzvah. Give me back the watch." So what would Reuven the Ganav have to do now? Reuven the Ganav would have to put on his gantle, and maybe he'd have to go to the mikveh first, and he'd have to say, "Yichotzim fenecha, you know, hinini muchan mezumen to be behind the mitzvah of returning the of giving the watch to Shimon," and he makes a bracha. Obviously, it's ridiculous and it's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. Absolutely absurd. It can't be. What difference does this make to us? So of all things, I found a most magnificent, magnificent tshuva that was written by the Gedol HaPoskim, one of the great, the greatest posek of our generation, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Sheyichye L'yom Tov Marucha. Gedol HaPoskim, who lives just up the road in Shari Chesed. Let me give you a few classics. I mean, when I read this tshuva, just I must say I was very excited. You don't find every day that a posek sort of agrees with you nearly all the way down the line. But the question was fascinating. What he deals with is, you know, of course, that there's a sefer called Shmiras Shabbos Kehilchosa that was written by Rabbi Yehoshua Neifert and by Itvigan. A sefer that has clearly turned into be a classic in its time, nearly immediately accepted by Klal Yisrael. There are those who had all sorts of complaints to the sefer, but you should know the final posek, I believe, the greatest of all poskim are Klal Yisrael. There can be people with complaints, and there can be people who make all sorts of remarks and comments, but there's a healthy, healthy instinct that Klal Yisrael had. The sefer has been accepted as a landmark sefer in Hilchos Shabbos. There are a number of halachas that he says there that were unacceptable to others. And incidentally, that's the beauty of halacha. The beauty of halacha is that there is the give and take. There were those who opposed some of halachot in Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, but since a good number of the halachas were written by Rav Neivit in consultation with Rav Shlomo Zalman, so Rav Shlomo Zalman said he had to come to the defense of the sefer. Following halacha, Nebuch, Shabbos. Shabbos, and in an apartment there's somebody who is ill. Somebody who's ill. I mean, it doesn't have to be a deathly illness. You know, of course, that the halacha is that pikuach nefesh, if somebody's life is endangered, this is docha Shabbos, it sets aside Shabbos. And pikuach nefesh doesn't mean that mamish somebody is nefesh on one's deathbed. A high fever is already reason, according to Rav Meisha, 101 temperature. I don't know how do you translate that in. I will probably live here another 100 years, and I'll never learn Celsius. That's all. We were raised on Fahrenheit. What is it? 38, 39, 40. Okay. I have such difficulty buying a suit or a pair of shoes over here. I'll never learn. Okay. So in the event that one is a child, somebody is ill, and the halach is you're permitted to be mechal Shabbos. I need hot water for the chal. I have two choices. One choice is my next door neighbor always has a samovar. I'm telling you, with boiling hot water, they'll never finish it. A whole week they won't finish it. So I can walk next door and ask my neighbor for hot water. Or the halacha is that I'm permitted to be mechal Shabbos, or I should be mechal Shabbos for the chayla in the house. Don't go next door.
go ahead and boil up a pot of water and be done with it. Rav Shlomo Zalman Paskins, boil up the hot water. You don't have to go next door to ask for hot water. Not only you don't have to go next door for hot water, though it will never happen, if you ask the person next door, he doesn't really have to give you the hot water. I mean, of course, there isn't a soul in the world who'll come in to somebody, knock on somebody's door and say, listen, I have a chayil house, I need hot water. They'll tell you, of course, take all the hot water I have, I'll give you everything. But the halacha, they don't have to give you the hot water. You don't have to ask for the hot water. And for that matter, you know, they may be sleeping. You have no business upsetting their Shabbos rest. The Torah said, Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Shabbos. Go ahead, boil up the hot water. You need the same halacha, you need the light for a chola. And somebody next door has all sorts of candles lit. I can go in and get a candle, or I can light a candle here. Same halacha. I light the candle here. I don't have to go next door. Another halacha that he writes in Shmiras Shabbos Kilchasa, and Rav Shlomo Zalman is the source. Somebody's brought into hospital Shabbos in the afternoon, and they don't have food prepared for it. But the nurses who came that day brought lunches along. Should we ask the nurses to give some of their lunch to the chola, or do we go ahead and just cook up a meal for the chola? Halacha. I mean, you got it straight. You know already what Rav Shlomo Zalman is going to pass. What are you talking about? The nurses don't have to give their lunch away. You shouldn't even ask the nurses for their lunch. There's a chaylid. Go ahead and desecrate the Shabbos blessedly in order to prepare a meal for the chola. A fourth halacha maybe that we should deal with also. That others disagreed with him. A live wire comes down on a street on Shabbos. An electric wire, chut chashmal nifsak, and there's a sakonis nefashis on the street. There is a live wire on the street. What are you going to do? One possibility is go to a telephone, call up the Chevrat Chashmal, you call up the electric company, and they say that they have, crews, Lishat Chirum, emergency crew. Call the Chevrat Chashmal and let them come and fix it. Sakonis Nefashis. There is another possibility, listen, it's Shabbos. So we'll have people who will stand near this Chut Chashmal and tell people, stay away. Or for that matter, maybe we'll have a sign prepared in advance of Shabbos in case a Chut Chashmal will ever go down. They will put a big sign over there, Sakona Chut Chashmal, an electric live wire is there lefanecha. You know, of course, what Rav Shlomo Zalman Paskins. You go to the phone and you call up the Chevrat Chashmal. We're talking about people's lives may be endangered, and therefore call them, let them come and fix it. Come and fix it. There were others who disagreed with him and said, no, what are you talking about? Why should we do something of this sort? So what if people will stand each one an hour or two at a time and make sure that nobody's coming close, or will have a sign prepared? It may be a similar question. A person's wife is expecting, she has to go to the hospital. Do you go next door? My neighbor next door has a car. I can call Magen David Adom, I can call the ambulance. Or my next door neighbor, my best friend. I'm sure I'll wake him up at 4 o'clock in the morning and ask him to drive me and my wife to the hospital. He'll get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and he'll be smiling and he says, of course I'll do it. Do you do that? Or do you get into your own car and drive to the... or do you call Magen David Adom? So you know already what the psak halacha are of Shlomo Zalman, and of course there are others who disagree. And what of all the strange things, or maybe it shouldn't be that strange anymore, and what does he base it on? And what does he base it on? You know what he bases it on? Bobby Machteret.
Reuven comes to steal a watch from Shimon. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, Torah never said that Shimon should relinquish that which belongs to him to the Ganav Reuven. No such thing. I don't have to relinquish that which is mine. You know what I can do? I have the right to go ahead and gun down Reuven, kill him in cold blood, because the man is a dead man. But Torah doesn't say that I should go ahead and give my watch to him. Because when Torah says a certain halacha, no, maybe I want to be firm about it. Go kill Reuven. I'm not going to kill Reuven. I'm going to give him my watch. I'm going to give him my watch. No. Torah says, kill him. You're allowed to kill him. Ain't lo domin. The man, you're not killing somebody live, as Rashi says. This man's a dead man. You're just killing a dead man. Because Torah does not demand of somebody that I give up something that's mine. I have a right to give up something that's mine, and Jews are always doing it, but not when we're coerced. Nobody's going to threaten my life and get something from me. You're going to come in and ask me for an edavah to tzedakah, a chaylin needs money, a chosin and kal have to get married and they don't have money to get married, a yeshiva is in dire straits or even not in dire straits, I'll give you whatever I can give you, I'll give you whatever I can give you. But that's giving of my own free will. I've made the decision. But that I should be coerced by a terrorist who comes into my house and Torah should say you have to give in to terrorism? No. I don't have to relinquish anything that's mine. In Cain, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, same thing is true. The Rebbeinu said you have a chayla in your house, go ahead and be mechal Shabbos, don't bother anybody else. You have to trouble somebody else. I told you, I'd rather be mechal my Shabbos. Be mechal Shabbos. You don't have to go next door. And maybe that somebody needs the hot water, and maybe it's time at 4 o'clock in the morning, and he doesn't really want to be woken up at 4 o'clock in the morning. There is no such thing. Torah does not demand that I impinge on the rights and the money and the rest and the sleep of somebody else. The Rosh Hashanah says, you know, do me a favor. Don't be such a big tzaddik with my Shabbos. You know what I tell you? Do me a favor. You have a chayil in the house. Go ahead and be mechal Shabbos. The nurses came on Shabbos with their lunch. That's their lunch. We need food for a chayil. Subavakasha, I tell you what to do. Go ahead and cook up food for the one who is ill. There's a sakonis nefoshis because there are live wires out over there. What do you mean, matriach people, that they should stand here on the street all day to warn people away? What's that lacha when there's sakonis nefoshis? You can be mechal Shabbos. B'vakasha, pick up the telephone and go ahead and call the chevrat chashmal. Every one of the ideas that we have expressed over here, Rav Shlomo Zalman says all of these things. He brings, for example, a Ramah and a Magen Avraham in Shulchan Aruch. And you're going to see it's going to be even more significant to us than you can imagine. The halach is the following. Akum halach in Hilchos Shabbos. Akum shetzoru al hayaros Yisrael. Goyim who have laid siege to Jewish cities. Imbo al iskei malam. If they've come for money, ein mechalim et aleim et haShabbos. We're not mechal Shabbos. Bo al iskei nefashes. If they come to kill, vafilu stam. Even if they come, they attack, and we don't know why they've laid siege. We don't know whether they're coming to steal or they're coming to kill. Yotzim aleim bechlei zayin, you go out against them with weapons. U'mechalim aleim as haShabbos, and you mechal Shabbos. U'bi'ir hasmucha l'svar, listen to this halacha. If it's a city that is near the boundary, near the border, it's a border town. I don't know, it's Metula.
it's Kiryat Shmona. It may mean men, one of many Yishuvim along the Bekat HaYarden. If it's an Ir HaSmuch Al Asfar, a city that's close to the border, Afilu Lo Boa Elo Al Iske Teva Mekash, if all they've come for is straw and hay, they want to take straw and hay from us. Mechalim Aleim Es HaShabbos Yimechal HaShabbos. Why Yimechal HaShabbos? Because a border city, a town, a village, a hamlet, a kibbutz, a moshav, a yishuv that's on the border is really the key to the rest of Eretz Yisrael. And once they get that, if they get that, Eretz Yisrael is open before them. A city that's on the border, even if all they came is they want straw or hay, you go out and you mechal Shabbos. And the Ramah adds, afilu lo bo adayin, even if they haven't come yet, el erotzim lava, we have information that they want to come. We don't have to wait for them to come. We are permitted a preemptive strike. If we have information that leaves the impression that they want to attack, even if it's doubtful, so it's suffik pikuach nefesh. Suffik pikuach nefesh. If there's a doubt whether Jewish lives are in danger, you're also mechalul Shabbos. Yesh mi shomer, there's another halacha. There's somebody who says, shebizman azeh afilu bo aliskei mamon mechalul. Somebody who says that nowadays, even if they come only for money, you're mechalul Shabbos, shem lo yamichenu Yisrael, because if the Jew is not going to permit him, the goy lishlol v'lav, coming for money or coming for things already involves life and death, because if Jews are going to stand up and protect their property, they're going to kill them. However, hakol lefi ha'inyan, everything depends on the circumstances. There's a Magen Avraham here. The Magen Avraham, one of the Mefarshim on the Shulchan Aruch, says the following. It's sort of him. What was this last halacha? The last halacha was that today, even if they come for money, it really involves life and death, because if Jews won't let them take the money, they'll kill them. Now, I imagine it's possible that there was a time that theft was not something that automatically included a threat to life. I don't know, there are those of us, those of us who may yet remember a time, we remember, we're from a previous generation. We remember a time when you were able to walk in the middle of Manhattan at 2:00 in the morning, where a ganef was, a gentleman ganef. There were Robin Hoods, but there weren't Chotzken and Netherlands. Today, the world has certainly become a much more violent place. There were times that a violent crime in New York was a rarity. Today, a non-violent crime is a rarity. People were able to come and steal, and if you don't steal, gate mavaita, that's all. But Hagenin has become every minutes there's a murder in the United States of America. It's a different world. Says the Magen Avraham, and I'm going to leave you to react on this. Says the Magen Avraham, what do you mean if they come for money, so it involves life or death? Why? Because the Jew won't let him take his money. He's going to stand up for his money. So therefore, he's going to want to kill him. So it's a question of life and death. Says the Magen Avraham, it's sort of chiyin. You have to look at this. Let the Jew permit him to take the money. V'lo yichal v'shabbos. And let him not be mechal v'shabbos. V'efshah, it's possible. Kivin de'ein oda mamet atzmo al-mumono. Since a person can't stand by as they take his money, chashinim, we're afraid, shemo yamod echad negdam, maybe somebody else is going to stand up against the thieves, the yehoreg, and he'll be killed. V'lachein mechalulin, therefore we desecrate the Shabbos. Avol ba'odam yachid, if it's one man alone, yoniach likach memara, let him take his money, v'lo yichalul Shabbos, not be mechalul Shabbos. What the Magen Avraham says is the following.
that if Goyim come against a number of Jews, then even if I would be ready not to be Mechal Shabbos, and for the sake of Shabbos I'll be ready, take my money. That's not going to help much, because I can't control other people. There may be others who are going to stand up for their money, and therefore it's going to become a case of life and death. So therefore we better deal with it as though we're all in danger right now. But if, he says, if Goyim come against one Jew, you know what the right thing for him to do is? The right thing for him to do is give his money and not be Mechal Shabbos. Asks Rav Shlomo Zalman, what's the Magen Avraham saying? What's the Magen Avraham saying? Torah does not legislate that I have to give. I have to give anything that's mine to somebody else. I don't have to give in to terrorism. I don't have to simply collapse like a deck of cards because somebody who is a thief, a ganef, a reitzeach, is coming against me. And not only Rav Shlomo Zalman asks this question, he mentions, and I found others who ask, they don't understand what the Magen Avraham is saying. It means the following. There's a principle that is being established in this pasuk in the Machteret Yimatzei Haganef. A principle is being established, and a principle that applies in all of Torah, and it applies today as well, which means certainly in the halachot that appear in Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, there you understand quite clear. No point, there's no necessity, and it's extremely important for people to know it. You shouldn't go next door to ask for hot water. You shouldn't go next door to ask for aid or assistance if there's something you can do through Chilul Shabbos in your own home. And what's extremely important is, and Rav Shlomo Zalman points this out a number of times, precious time can be lost. Precious time can be lost. You know, how should I do it? How should I do it? There is, now let me make it clear, there is a halacha that says that if without loss of time I can do the same halacha, but do it with a shinu, slightly different, then I should. Only if there is absolutely no loss of time. If there's any loss of time involved, no, be mechal Shabbos. And people, I get the question all the time, you know, how do I drive my wife to the hospital on Shabbos? You know, turn the key with a shinui, not with a shinui, put on the brakes, the brake lights go on, stop at a red light, don't stop at a red light. So and then when you come to the hospital, what do? You turn it off. Once you've come to the hospital, you don't have to, you don't need the car anymore. Should you leave the car going until after Shabbos? So first of all, I tell them, listen, I want you and your wife and the soon-to-be-born child to get to the hospital gesund geheilt. Drive normally to the hospital. Drive normally to the hospital. That's all. Go. If once you start considering already how to do it in different ways, and it can happen. The car will crash. Chas v'shulam, who knows what can happen. I know there was something that I didn't know that I found out this Shabbos. I have a daughter who has a specialty in giving birth on Shabbos. So she gave birth, Taka, this Shabbos. Okay, that's it. Doesn't sound good on the tape. A daughter from Beitar, after three boys, thank God, a healthy girl, and she, third one that she gave birth to on Shabbos. The other one, that's right. So at least I found out something. My son-in-law tells me that when he gets to Shari Tzedek, there's a guy waiting to park the car. Isn't that nice? So all of the shilas about parking the car are no problem, because there it is a problem already. To turn off the ignition, park the car, close the door and the lights go off, this already no longer involves any kind of pikuach nefesh. Nobody's life is in danger. So there's a guy waiting, and he just gets into the car, parks it, and brings you up the key. Very good. Very good, a chariot said. Incidentally, this of course only applies to a private car. The halacha is, and Shmir Shabbos brings that also, in the event that somebody calls an ambulance, and the ambulance is going to take somebody to the hospital, the ambulance always has to go back to its station. Even though going back to the station doesn't seem as though there's a chayla, but the ambulance also always has to be at its station in the event that somebody may call. A private car doesn't have to go yesterday afterwards during the afternoon after my daughter gave birth, and my son-in-law walked to Hanok, and then I took him after Shabbos I took him to the hospital, and he picked up his car, visited his wife, and then picked up his car. Which is a gorgeous little maiden. Okay. So there's a principle that's being established. The principle is, God says, be mechalel Shabbos. You don't have to trouble somebody else. You don't have to trouble, you don't have to wake up anybody else, you don't have to take somebody's hot water, you don't have to ask the nurses for their food. For that matter, by right, they don't even have to give it. I don't have to give my hot water. I can turn to you and say, Bevakasha, you have a chayla in your house. What's the chayla's name? Go cook up water in your house. Because there's a principle. I don't have to relinquish anything out of necessity to somebody else. I do have a right. Not only a right, and Yisrael Kedoshim Hain, Jews are holy people. We give up a great deal of what we have, of our time, our effort, our energy, our money for somebody else. Of course we do that. But God says, when there's a question of being mechal Shabbos, do me a favor. You have a chayla of being mechal Shabbos. The same principle that emerges from Bava Machteret. I don't have to give the ganav. I don't have to give him my watch. Torah would never have legislated it, because legislating that would be the destruction of all of society. A destruction of society. It means also that man should not, if at all possible, man should never give in to any kind of coercion. Coercion? No, I should not give in. I should stand up against it. Let's translate it even into a more contemporary question. Do we relinquish land for peace or not? What's the halacha? Do we return, I shouldn't use the word return, I take it back. Should we relinquish, that was the correct word that I used, should we relinquish the Golan for the sake of peace? Should we relinquish the Gush except for Ephrat? Ephrat, okay. Do we relinquish territory? Do we relinquish territory for peace? So what does it really mean? What it really means is, what we're being told is, give up that land or we will attack. Or we will attack. Would the Torah ever legislate give the watch? Torah doesn't legislate give the watch. No such legislation. Giving the watch would be establishing terrorism as something extremely legitimate. Man comes in to steal, so the Gabbanishim would say in Taylor, the Bakashai, came in, give him the watch. No such thing. We don't give in to terrorism. We don't give in to this kind of coercion. But you have to understand, I started this year by saying the three possibilities. Shimon will kill Reuven will kill Shimon, Reuven and Shimon will kill each other, but there are a number of other possibilities that we have to consider. What happens if Reuven is going to come against Shimon, and Reuven comes in to steal? He's armed to the teeth with a Kalashnikov, with an Uzi, with an M16. And Shimon Nebuch, the owner of the watch, has absolutely, he can't defend himself. So what do you think the halacha is going to be?
Give him
the watch. It's not because the halacha is given the watch. There is no choice. There is no choice. What are you going to do? You're just going to stand there and commit suicide. Give him the watch and hope he doesn't kill you after you give him the watch. Which means that in the relationship between the Reuven and Shimon, or Mahmad and Yisrael,
If, God forbid, Yisrael is not ready, then you give everything and just hope that it doesn't mean being pushed into the sea. But there's an element of tragedy. The element of tragedy in our region of the world is the following. There's another possibility. What happens if Reuven comes to take the watch from Shimon, but you know why he comes to take it? Because Reuven says, it's my watch, and you took it from me. I'm not coming to steal a watch. You ganef Shimon, you took my watch. Then you know what you're left with? You're left with an insoluble problem. Then the only solution for the problem, and any solution for the problem may only be temporary. It'll just make a the only difference is going to be who has more weaponry? Who's ready to stand up? Over here, the halacha would say, kol da'alim gvar. There is a halacha who says whoever is stronger is the one who is going to prevail. The one who is stronger is going to prevail. That's the tragedy of the situation in which we find ourselves. I don't believe that there is truly any solution. I think that we are fooling ourselves by thinking that relinquishing any kind of territory is going to make any difference. As long as Mahmoud's purpose is clear, his intent is clear. He wants every piece of the land. He doesn't believe that he owns half the watch. He believes he owns the whole watch. He's not coming into the house to take it. Give me the strap and the you can keep the mechanism. He owns the whole watch, he believes. Where do we have something similar? You will recall in Parshat Vayishlach, back in Sefer Bereishis, in Parshat Vayishlach, there's the story of Yaakov who takes his family across the river after he has already met up with Lavan and finally is able to leave and in peace. He leaves Lavan, and then he's on his way to Eretz Yisrael, and he finds out that Esav is coming toward him with 400 men armed to the teeth. He divides his family into two camps, and during the course of the night, in the middle of the night, he takes them across the river, and then by Yivater Yaakov Levado, Yaakov remained alone. Rashi, the Gemara, explains why did he remain alone? Because he had gone back to the other side of the river Yabok for Pachim Ketanim. He had left some small jars on the other side of the river. So he goes back and he's attacked by a man. And there's a struggle. They wrestle until morning. The Gemara says that in the middle of the night, Yaakov turned to the man and he asked him, "V'chi ganevato? Are you a thief? Or kuvyustus ato? Or are you a murderer?" What was it that happened during the course of the night? Yaakov assumes that the man wants his jars. So he came to steal his jars. So there's a struggle. Yaakov, obviously, Ein Adam Chazaka, Ein Adam Mamed Atzma Mamono. A person is not going to stand idly by while somebody is going to take the jars. He's certainly not going to tell him, take the jars. Not going to do that. So he fights for it. So let me ask you, what happens if somebody comes to steal jars and is gelumptimish? He can't succeed. He's not able to steal the jars. So what do you do? What do you do? You leave. You run away. Go steal somebody else's jars. The only thing is, this struggle is going on now for a few hours during the course of the night. Yaakov, there's something, forgive the pun, or whatever you call it, in the middle of the dark of night, it dawns on Yaakov that this man didn't come for the jars, because if all he wanted were the jars, he would have gone off to steal from somebody else. Why is he struggling with me? It's not the jars. It's me that he wants.
and therefore he turns to him and he says, "V'chiganav ato, are you a thief? Or kubyustus ato, are you a killer? Are the jars no more than the pretext? But what you really want is me." In the morning, of course, Vayizrach lo Hashemesh. Similar terminology. At dawn, and as Chazal say, there will come the great dawn someday, that the struggle between Yaakov and those who are opposed to him, the Esavs and the Yishmaels, that struggle will end. Zorcha olav Hashemesh, when the sun is going to shine. What we see from Yaakov's nocturnal struggle is that it finally occurs to Yaakov, as it finally has to occur to all of us. The struggle is not over jars. The struggle is not over a piece of land. I think, and I'm really trying to talk Torah, not politics. I'm not a politician. I'm not running for any office. I'm just trying to interpret Torah. As I see, the struggle is not over a few kilometers in the Golan. I mean, we all know that. I don't know why they're sort of, we've begun to feel, because you keep hearing time and time again, like there are breakthroughs, despite the fact that the deportees are up there. Everybody's coming to the table. Everybody's going to be in Washington. We're going to talk. We negotiate. There are breakthroughs. Assad's heart is you know, it's human, and he understands. He doesn't have Russia anymore. The only option is peace. The fact is, we're not dealing with Ganodin. We're dealing with Kubyustus. We're dealing with killers. Armon HaNetziv. How far is Armon HaNetziv from here? How far is Armon HaNetziv? We're talking about killers. They've been doing the same thing for 100 years, and it's been done to Jews for thousands of years. And when they didn't have the Golan, they still invaded and attacked. And when there wasn't a state of Israel, they still attacked. And they still call for the complete removal of this foreign growth in the Middle East. We're not talking about a struggle for jars or a struggle for a piece of land. What we're talking about is a struggle of life and death. This is pikuach nefesh, and at best, it certainly is suffering pikuach nefesh. I become a little unnerved, and I remember a dialogue, and this is a dialogue that I've heard often, and one has to know how to react and respond to this. Somebody will ask, and I've seen the question asked. Once in my shul in West Hempstead, it was somebody in shul who started up with the master of them all. Maya Kahana Hashem Yinkom Damo. He spoke in shul, and somebody, one of my American Jewish liberals, you know, his heart was bleeding, says, "All right, Kahana, what's worth more? A piece of land or the life of a Jewish soldier?" Quite a question, huh? Quite a question. Because what happens when somebody asks this question? When somebody asks this question, first of all, he's already in the position, he puts himself in the position of being a moral and ethical giant. He cares about the life of a Jewish soldier, and you don't care. What are you going to tell me? What kind of answer can you give? You know, so a piece of land is worth more than a life. How can you even answer that? It's difficult to get the words out. So of course, the man's mistake was that he started out with Meir Kahana. Because with Meir Kahana, he was already a boundly sayon. He had a great deal of experience in this, and he shot back instantly, "Would you give up the kotel?" Okay? So what he really did over here, I mean, it was instant.
now the guy, the other fellow is on the defensive. What's he going to say? He's going to say, yeah, I'm going to give up the kotel. No, I can't say you're going to give up the kotel. You're going to give up the Mishnah. Can't do that. Yeah, you can't do that. Right, you can't do that. So it was a standoff. But how does one respond to a question of this sort? You should know that if you ever took a course in basic logic 101 in college, then you would learn that there are certain fallacies, laws of logic. One of the laws of logic is the fallacy of the complex question. What's the pshat, a complex question? Man asks another man, have you stopped beating your wife already? And says, wait, what do you mean? I never beat her. No. Give me a yes or no answer. I want a yes or no answer. And you stop beating your wife lately. You can't answer it yes or no. The trap, of course, that is laid for somebody is anybody who's going to try and answer it yes or no at the harayin fall. Because you can't. It's a complex question. What's the meaning of a complex question? A complex question is really there are a series of questions over here, and somebody has turned the series of questions into one question. There's really two questions. Did you ever beat your wife? And in the event that the answer is to the first question is yes, and the second question is, are you still beating her? Have you stopped beating her? Or have you stopped stealing money? You know, it's really, you can't answer it yes or no because it's a complex question. What is really assumed in advance is that there was a previous question. Did you ever steal? And if the answer to that question was yes, I used to steal, so then you ask, are you still stealing? But what happens if the answer to the first question is, what are you doing about it? I never beat my wife and I never stole. So then there's no place for the second question. So the trap over here is, which is more valuable, the life of an Israeli soldier or a piece of land? Tell me. In other words, one demands an answer to this question, but you can't give an answer to this question because this is a complex question. Whose piece of land? Who wants that piece of land? Why do they want that piece of land? What has been their relationship with us all of these? There's a whole series of questions that have to be asked and answered before you can come to this question. And then maybe very well, at the end of the whole series of questions, you know what the answer would be? That piece of land against those people? Of course we should go out and fight for it, even if it means that we endanger our lives for it. Baba Machteret is establishing the principle. The principle is, if I can't defend my watch, I had better give my watch to Reuven. I better give it, Zayish Kanan. If I can defend it, my right not only to defend it, but I'm permitted to kill the intruder. I have no responsibility to give anything that's mine to somebody else who wants to coerce me and take it from me under no circumstances. Torah could never have legislated that I give it away, because if Torah would have legislated that, Torah would have been legislating the law of the jungle, and the seeds for the destruction of all society would be built in over there. It would mean led din v'led dayan. There's no judge, there's no justice, there's no tzedek in the world, no mishpat, nothing. It would be a world that would ultimately destroy itself in a very, very short period of time. There's no such thing. It may be one final comment. In a broader sense, it means in general not to give in to unfair coercion. We are all coerced in one way or another, but there are certain coercions that are subtle. I live in a certain society, in a shkuna, where there's a certain standard of behavior, so I have a choice. If I don't like the pressures, then I can leave. But then there are all sorts of other pressures, and litzari harav, to my great dismay, our community has become a community that in which there is a great deal of violence. Mahagitzach nish, what Mekenda Chavek Hargenin mentioned with Lashon Hara, with Rechilas, with anonymous phone calls, with all sorts of signs and notices on the streets, and I think that we are beginning to reap the whirlwind of this kind of coercion. We should have put our foot down 50 years ago and said that this verbal violence that appears on the streets of Yerushalayim will someday become a great deal worse than mere verbal violence. I see it all around me, very, very often. We, in our own religious community, we've lost a sense of ethics and morality. And we believe that L'shem Shamayim, whatever is our personal L'shem Shamayim, anything is permitted. We can coerce. I think we have a responsibility in the Makeret, in Matzei HaGanav. The responsibility is not to give in to coercion. The moment is going to come when we're going to stand up and say, our leadership that permits this is wrong, and we're not going to stand for it anymore. We're not going to stand for it anymore. Because Torah says, under no circumstances, we don't give in to coercion. In the Machteret, in Matzei HaGanav, Tillem. Okay, I can't end with the word Tillem. In the Machteret, in Matzei HaGanav, there's a responsibility to be concerned for the welfare of Klal Yisrael, for the physical welfare of Klal Yisrael, the emotional and the spiritual welfare of Klal Yisrael. Okay, that's a better ending. All right.